This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora, e hoa mā. You're tuned to the penultimate episode of Aratoi On Air with your Dunedin City Council Creative Partnership hosts, Amy Tawa and Sean Norling. This week I caught up with a South African poet and recent Castleberg resident, Selge Ntuli, about their time in Otipoti, Dunedin, and some of the things they were getting up to here. Here it is. Kia ora and welcome along to Aratoi On Air with me, your host, Sean Norling. And it's my great privilege to be joined in the studio today by Selge Ntuli. Thank you so much for your time today and welcome Thanks. To sunny Dunedin.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm having a great time. At least you say sunny because the weather is a little different to us. But thank you. Thank you.
Born in Kwamashu in 1990 mm-hmm. and gapped it to Durban when you were a young boy.
Yeah.
And now you find yourself on the, you know, across the equator line in Australasia. You've just been in Australia and now you're here in Aotearoa. This is a big question, but that's a big journey to take for a kid from Kwamashu.
Definitely.
Can you illustrate your path from that kid growing up there mm-hmm. to where you find yourself now?
Well, I'd say it's all down to just following the lineage. Poetry is a big aspect of our culture. It's in our DNA. You had Izimbongi, who started the whole poetry, oral bards, who used to recite the lineage of our clans. And the Ntuli clan, which is my surname, is no different. Our surname means dust. And it comes from the scattering dust that came as we were running away from cannibals. It's in my Isithakazelo, my praise song. And so poetry is where this is sort of spoken of through the oral bards. And so you start with the original sort of poets that I was introduced to, Mzwakhe Mbuli and Zwelakhe Mkiva. That was when I was still young, and these were like struggle poets. And then you move off into sort of hip-hop music, rap music, more of my thing nowadays.
What are you listening to? Give me, drop some names on me.
Right now I'm listening to Kendrick Lamar's Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers.
Great album.
And just anything up that alley, a lot of Nas right now. Nas is having a big resurgence.
Yeah.
And so a lot of my stuff is rhythmic based as well. So I released my debut in 2015 called Stranger. And then we had a bit of a mixed review because I felt like I was a bit young, 25 years, celebrating 10 years in literature this year, 2025. So yeah, we moved. So I didn't write anything for like 5 years. 2020 came back with a chapbook, opened a lot of doors for me. I came back with the vengeance, you could say that. Yeah, 2020 rumbling. And then I have three more books, of which the latest one is Oele, which is bilingual. Preservation of culture is happening in that book. And so, you know, it's been a journey. 10 years of poetry, Oceania, second trip, but this is probably the most impactful trip. Got to deal or see a lot of the literary culture here, especially with a very extraordinary morai experienced on last week Friday at the Dunedin Writers and Readers Festival. So it's
fantastic.
Really a lot of memories, yeah.
You currently find yourself as the Castleberg Trust Margaret Egan Cities of Literature Writer in Residence 2025. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
One of your stated aims in taking up that residency is that you look at New Zealand's Indigenous history to help you see a future for your own Zulu culture.
Yeah.
Speak to me about the importance of an indigeneity within your own practice and perhaps some of the syncresis, the overlaps that you see between New Zealand's Indigenous culture and your own.
Yes, even just before I came, you know, we saw a lot of brave sort of acts happening in New Zealand Parliament, you know. Won't go into details, but everybody kind of knows what's going on. And so we are looking at, the world is looking at New Zealand, specifically the Indigenous peoples of New Zealand, as to how they navigate this very strong imposition on their culture, of which is happening in South Africa as well. Strong enough for me to need to have a bilingual collection of poetry, of which admittedly was very difficult for me to write in isiZulu as well, because of how English is almost drilled into us, specifically with the education system. And so, yeah, it's always good to see sort of the bilingual quality of even the signs here in New Zealand. They're written in Maori and English, and that is also under threat, I understand, as well. So, yeah, indigenous cultures, with the way modernity is going, are definitely under threat, and it's always good to see how other parts of the world deal with that, and so, which is why I was so inspired to come here. And it's always been a key part of my work. I work with English alongside English, but I do center my indigenousness, my indigenous language, Zulu. And so it's been interesting to see how that is done by other writers, especially had a lot of good conversations at the festival about just specifically that. And so, yeah, it's just been a very rewarding experience to come and experience how New Zealand and the Maori people do it. Yeah.
You spoke about oral tradition and how that was the way it was done where you're from.
100%.
Much like the way it's done within Māori tanga as well, an oral tradition, no written language.
Yeah.
But the messages, the pūrākau, finds its way out through memory, through art, through dance, and through those creative expressions. How have you found kind of navigating being, you know, someone who trades in pen and paper, capturing, transcribing and expressing those ideas, which are by and large relayed from the brain through the tongue to the next person?
Yeah, it's an interesting discussion because, you know, as far as literary poets back home, we are always at odds with our spoken word counterparts. And it doesn't need to be that way. I think we're all doing the same job of preserving our cultures and centering our indigenous cultures. I just believe, you know, I'm just following the lineage of those who came before me. I am paying homage to them in my own way. And I make this my own. And if it means I need to write it down, then that's how we'll do it. And if other people will express that through the spoken word, that's how they'll choose to do it. And so it's more about finding comfortable ways of preserving or transmitting the knowledge and what you people here call mana as well. Definitely feel like it's important for us to just present ourselves as ourselves. And that's what I do. Yeah.
Lovely. And poetry, I think in the 21st century and maybe before, you'd know more than me about it. But the form itself is undergoing pretty rapid change. I've seen people experimenting with the form of writing now, where it's, you know, we probably all grew up reading Shakespeare and Yeats and Shelley and Byron and these kind of Western poets. But now I'm seeing people be more playful, experimental, risky, challenging with the way in which they put words to paper. Does that inform your practice at all, or are you finding a way through that in your own practice?
In a way, it does. I always emphasize the message that we have to make the writing our own. If it works, I'll put it in. If it doesn't, I'll leave it out. Though I am somebody who navigates a couple of literary spaces. For instance, I'm a South African poet. I write for South African audiences, as well as existing in the Pan-African literary space, of which I do participate in a couple of initiatives. I'm an editorial fellow this year with Alang House in Nigeria. I've had guest editorial stints at a Liberian literary journal called Pepper Coast Lit, run by my very good friend Jeremy Karn. We did also found a Instagram-based zine with my Ghanaian friend Henye Kerekwaku and Palmer and Jacob called Wild Pine. And so there are different ways in which I exist, different sort of literary spaces. And of course, there's also the international market that I like to delve in, which is the US and the UK. So, yeah, it's just a lot of context, a lot of languages I need to speak in. And so I take what I need, I leave what I don't need, and I do what suits me, what works for me. And, yeah.
We're in the midst of a technological revolution at the moment with our ability to transmit our message across the world in a microsecond. Poetry is quite often kind of viewed as this traditional art form without being no slant on the form, but people associate it with that solitary kind of sedentary exercise of sitting in a room with a pen, chin stroking, you know.
Yeah.
How have you found kind of navigating those social spaces and the internet generally in order to kind of spread your message? Is that a blessing, a curse, or a bit of a poison chalice?
It is a bit of a, I'd call it a poison chalice because to measure one's worth through one, how many followers you have is something I've been guilty of doing, admittedly. You know, you have people like Rube Kaur, who are the most probably popular poet on the planet. And I think, there's room for that. You know, I'm not going to bash the Instagram poets, but there are also craft-heavy poets like myself who believe in the mechanics. How do you sort of structure a line in a way that it will resonate with people, even things like pacing and line breaks, you know, I'm that category of poet, but we can all coexist. I say that, you know, there don't need to be any throwing of chairs.
In some of your bios, I see you described as a classicist.
Yeah.
So is there a tension between the way you've kind of learned and that and these newer forms of, you know, are you having to kind of navigate or constantly reassess how you're doing it?
Yeah, I have had to. You know, back home, they always have this thing of asking me that same question of, like, how does the classics come into your work? And I always say, you know, I'm not looking to center the classics. If anything, I would rather center African mythology, African sort of politics and philosophies into my work. Called classics, the way people understand it, is more of a Eurocentric view.
Mm-hmm.
And it will be very dishonest of me to say that I do sort of center that or position that. I would describe my work as mainly a collage. I do add influences from the classics as much as I would add an influence from a hip-hop album or a film that I liked. So it's just, I make it work for me. I'm not going to be adhering to any classics.
You know what they say, know the rules before you break the rules, right?
Of course. And, when we break them, you know, there's a big bang that comes off the way I break them. So I do believe in sort of also paying homage. And now we'll do that. We'll respect what came before us. But, you know, we are also making history as well, you know, down the line, they'll look at us and see what we did. They'll look at this trip in Ottapotti, and it'll be a significant mark, you know. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, you're in Ottapotti and you're in that kind of sleepy seaside village of Broad Bay, Dunedin.
Yeah.
How have you found kind of settling into that community, or is, I imagine the peace, the quiet, the kind of tranquil nature of the place is really conducive to just concentrating on your craft. Speak a little bit about how you've found it out there.
Really, the Portobello Road, really windy roads. I always feel like, you know, I had to hold on to my seats, you know, when we drive out there. And but it's a nice view. A nice view to, like, think deeply about the craft, think about my life, you know, where I'm going as well. Castleberg House is, you know, really, really steeped in a lot of history. So much great writers have been there already. And I'm so honored to be included myself in that. And, of course, leave some books behind for the next person to read. But, yeah, it's just understanding that I come here as a literary tourist. I want to relax, but I also want to do some work as well, because to be stagnant and just relax too much will also be counterproductive to the longer journey.
Part of your plan on being out at the Castleberg House is to continue working towards your fourth full-length collection of poetry, Blues for King Kong.
Yeah.
a multilingual fusion of Afro jazz and blues inspired lyric poetry.
Yeah.
That sounds amazing. How's that going?
Yeah, is it going? Yeah, because when I came here, I wanted to do something different to what I had previously done with this current book that just came out in July. So Blues for King Kong is inspired by Afro jazz. It's inspired by the exiled musicians, South African musicians in America, like your Harlem, a lot of the Harlem jazz scene.
Mm.
And so I wanted to work to my strengths, which is lyric poetry as well. And I also wanted to include some prose poetry as well. Prose poetry being more of like a line between short fiction, flash fiction, you could call it as well. Just to give us a bit of variety, because with the poetry collections, one of my big criticisms is that they can sound the same, poem 1 to poem 30. And so it's good to vary your styles up a little bit.
Mm.
And so, which is why I was specific in saying that I wanted lyric poetry alongside prose poems as well.
Explain to me what you mean by lyric poetry.
Lyric poetry for me would be, if I was to get a drummer, for instance, he could play alongside me and I could recite my poetry. It does have a rhythm to it.
Pulse, a rhythm.
And most of my work is like that. But, you know, with regards to making variety so it doesn't, reading the collection not boring, I tend to vary it up a little bit and not rely so much on lyric poetry as a crutch. But one of the things I need to develop now is to present these poems in such a way that they're becoming one after the other, but they don't seem boring, which is what I need to think about at Castleberg House. Yeah.
How are you finding kind of coming down from this kind of line of residencies? You were in Australia before you were over here. You're over here now in such an idyllic kind of spot.
Yeah.
Then you're back off home, presumably? Yeah.
Going home.
What's your decompression process like? Or how do you get those feelings of, oh man, wish I was still in that house or, you know, doing that thing? How do you kind of adjust like a normal human being to the change in environment?
I think I'm not a normal human being.
Yeah.
I have a very strange process of readjusting, which is just going back and revising on the work that I did. So last year when I came back from Perth, I went through a rigorous sort of writing and editing phase, November, December, of which I was able to submit the final version of OLE in January, late January, early February. And so when I go back now, I just have another stop in Cape Town for my launches of OLE, the book. I had been touring with the book before I came. And then, so this is just like a working holiday kind of thing. And then I go back again. So, yeah, it's just going to be more writing, editing, but at a relaxed pace. Yeah.
One of your book covers reminds me of an album cover, Low End Theory.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Was that deliberate? Or?
That was deliberate. That was deliberate. I had this thing of sort of questioning, not questioning, but, you know, playfully sort of asking the question that, because Q-Tip considered himself a Zulu. The last Zulu was going to be one of his last albums. And so I'm like, I'm a Zulu. So why can't I do what you do? But yeah, I'm a big fan of, you know, that New York hip hop, Tribe Called Quest, The Far Side, you know. And it was a nice homage to that style that influenced mine. So yeah, definitely.
Durban's also a UNESCO City of Literature, as is Dunedin. Well done to both places. But you've been over here talking or participating in the Dunedin Writers and Readers Festival. You sat on a panel over the weekend, didn't you?
Yes, yes, yes.
How did that go? Tell me a little bit about what you discovered, what you learned from your peers, and the experience generally.
Yeah, It was a great experience. I must commend the organizers of the Dunedin Writers and Readers Festival. A lot of great moments and conversations were had. Again, I need to just emphasize that the marae was breathtaking on Friday.
Otako.
Nice. So that was a really great experience. And I got to ride with Tame Iti and Apriana Taylor. I became one of the most famous hitchhikers because I was hitting on the side of the road with a bus. And Jeanette, the co-chair, saw me and gave me a lift. But so it was a nice, memorable start to the weekend. And then we had nice sort of panels with my fellow poets. The one panel was a bingo session. So it was an interesting way that poetry is presented in Dunedin. It can take various forms, which I enjoyed. I hadn't experienced some of the different forms it was taking. The Wolf session as well, we had the poetry reading at Wolf, which is one of the most well-known establishments, I believe, here in Dunedin. So, it was interesting the way that, you know, the literary festival did not literally have to be like a very serious thing.
It can be seen to kind of spin out, be a little bit more organic, natural. Natural connections.
And I enjoyed that. I enjoyed that because, you know, people really come with their really uppity languages and, you know, come with their tenseness.
You said it, not me.
Yeah, it happens. It happens. You know, people come and they want to just try and, you know, over-intellectualize these things, of which it was nice to come as myself to a festival.
Let's get into that. What do you think about that kind of, certainly that perception around poetry, that it's an elite art form for academia, intellectuals, people that need to understand the meaning of a 17-syllable word?
I feel like we need to break that down as far as we can. Whatever we get the chance to, we need to just, you know, just humanize the genre, and that's what I try to do as well. Like even with the way I work, you know, I still believe that I'm one of those people who would have been alienated if I wasn't so stubborn. You know, you can't be shoving Shakespeare and Keats down my throat and not expect me to just not sort of gravitate to all that kind of thing. So I think that's kind of what my journey has been about, just to become a soldier for poetry and show that it does matter and it can be sort of presented in different ways, in ways that people can relate to.
Bravo. Did you feel any kind of weird psychic pressure or otherwise to kind of bone up, research up on your New Zealand poets before you came over here?
A couple of them reached out to me already on social media.
That's nice.
Liz Breslin was one of the first to reach out to me, and had some really interesting conversations with Liz. But yeah, you know, people here have been very open and warm, friendly. So many that I met, and you know, to give you a list of their names, I don't want to disappoint anybody and say like you forgot me.
We'll write the list after this. We'll get into it. We'll do it in the social media post. You're going to read a piece from Owele. Thank you so much.
I can read a Zulu piece which opens the collection. So the poem is called Umgeni, and it's named after a river in KwaZulu-Natal. The river's name is Entrance. I'm going to read it in isiZulu. Sondelani sizwe sabantsundu. Lomfula usuka kude kudala uhamba usiyafika abadala bazileta izexwayiso kudala besho bethi singane zakwethu qaphelani ningalinge nivume imphimbo yeni yome nithule ikakhulukazi manibone umnyakazo emanzini ningalinge nilinde nivele nishone khona kungabi namazwi asalele empinjeni fula osendela ngasolwandle siyakuncenga sicela usicacisele sifuna kuze ngawe sibuze kuwe sithi wena uthule uthini amaputikezi edlula egudla ngakwena Mlomada kati kama wapuza kuwe mkeni. Izi sebenzi zake sezi kondani ngo, nokoma. Umuso wako mkeni wabasi ndisa. Isizo sabantsundu sona sasalo nokoma. Thanks.
Tahua, beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing that with us and for sharing your time with me today. I really appreciate it. And
thank you so much.
Wish you all the positive warmth, blessings and good times out there your time in Broad Bay at the Castleberg Residency.
Yeah.
Sile Ntuli, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll be back again in a fortnight's time to wrap things up for the year. Until then, you can follow us on socials, Aratoi Otipoti, on Facebook and Instagram. And if you want to listen to previous episodes of Aratoi On Air, you can find them on most major podcast platforms or get along to oar.org.nz and dig them out there. Until next time, ka kite anō.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.